You're listening to a podcast from the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace.
Today, the topic which I think is of interest to many people in Kyiv, probably not too many people in Brussels, it relates to the free trade area. We are waiting for the last round of talks. We are observing in Kyiv a rather positive dynamics on finalizing these talks. And today, for us, for the Institute of the World Policy, which hosts this event, it's a great honor to have people in Brussels which deal with this issue on a daily basis. I would like to talk to our guests in our Kyiv studio that we have in Brussels, Philip Cuisson. Just a short explanation, that's the chief responsible person on part of the EU on concluding, on conducting talks on free trade zone. We have Inna Kipps, representative of the Department on the Political Issues of the General Directorate of the EU. I think she'll wrap up some issues and we'll speak about the position of the... We have Olga Shumila Taniola, who is an invited expert from Carnegie Foundation and is an invited expert who also is a partner at organizing this event. We are thankful to her. Our video bridges do not just contemplate for long presentations, so we'll start right away the discussion. Therefore, I would like to put a question which is in the agenda of our meeting. It's the free trade zone and Ukraine. To what extent it is closed, to what extent it is deep, and to what extent it is expensive? I would like Mr. Philip Cuisson answer this question quite in a laconic way. And then also other participants may comment on it, and we also would put questions. Also, I encourage all Kyiv participants to put not only questions but also put forward their comments there, because it's issue not only economic but also of political importance, political dimension. Luckily or not like Mr. Cuisson, you have the floor.
Dobro dnia, Kyiv. Hello, Kyiv. We are welcoming you from Brussels, from the office of Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. I will give the floor to Philippe. I just wanted to say hello and to make the microphone. Microphone is off on your side. I wanted to make a correction that we have we have three people here who will be talking from different institutions. Philippe will be talking on behalf of the European Commission DG Trade as a chief negotiator for Ukraine on deep and comprehensive free trade. Inna Kipps will be speaking from the European Parliament, how Parliament sees the agreement and what the Parliament will have to do once the agreement is there. And we have Agnes Volikevich here, who has two heads. She used to work for the Ministry of Economy in Ukraine and also was part of the trade section of the Ukrainian mission. And now she works for Ukrainian business DTEC company that is interested in this specific agreement and its implementation. So I'll pass the floor to Philippe, who will tell us a little bit about the state of affairs and what the challenges for the conclusion of negotiations are.
Thank you very much, Olga. Good afternoon, dear friends. In that process, I'm maybe the naughty guy because I represent the Commission as a negotiator, and Inna from the European Parliament will be maybe on the more friendly side. But I used to consider myself as a friend of Ukraine, and I will try to explain why I trust this agreement come to an end, will be concluded very soon, and the consequences of such an agreement for Ukraine, which goes by far beyond trade. First of all, I heard that there is a positive dynamics right now in this negotiation. I think that's exactly the word that I would use, a very, very positive dynamic. It's clear that there is at least one important point of agreement between both sides, the European Commission on one side and the Ukrainian side, which is that we want this agreement. There is no doubt that both parties, we want this agreement. And we all know when there is a will, there is a way. So we have some issues to be addressed in that agreement. We are far from having solved all the problem, but it's clear that there is a will. And I'm very confident that this year, we will conclude this agreement. But let me recall that this free trade agreement called DCFTA, Deep and Comprehensive, is a very complex agreement, probably the most complex ever negotiated by the EU with a foreign partner. The most complex because it goes beyond free trade, it entails integration of Ukraine into the EU economy. Integration of Ukraine into the EU economy, which goes by far, far beyond free trade. This agreement is also complex because you are aware that it is part of a broader picture, which is the so-called association agreement. And it's not possible to have an agreement within the DCFTA alone. We have an agreement for the association agreement, including the DCFTA, or no agreement. Not only the DCFTA, and not only the association agreement. The whole package has to be agreed. So it's clear that this year, our objective is to conclude both the association agreement and the DCFTA. We all know, and I will not elaborate on this, that very important questions are addressed, are tackled into the association agreement, in particular concerning free circulation of person, and maybe more importantly, to recognize or not Ukraine as a European country according to the EU treaty, which has consequences for possible future steps in between the EU and Ukraine relationship. So I will not elaborate on this. I will just focus on the DCFTA. So if we have an agreement this year, this DCFTA will be part of a big agreement, a big political agreement, which will have to be ratified by 29 parliaments. It will have to be ratified by the European Parliament on one side, by the Rada, but also by the 27 Parliament of the Member States. But the DCFTA part has to be ratified only by the European Parliament and the Rada, and not the EU Member States, for one reason. Trade issues, all the trade issues, belong to Brussels. They are of community level. So we don't have to ask the Member States to ratify this part. So which means that in concrete terms, this part of the association agreement, I mean the DCFTA, will enter into force before the whole association agreement. If we conclude this agreement this year, the association agreement could enter into force, say, in two years, 3 years, we don't know. But the trade part could enter into force, say, at the age of 2012 or 13. So it will enter into force on a provisional basis before. When I said there is a will on both sides to have this agreement, as it was mentioned, there is an agreement at the highest level, in particular between the President Barroso for the European Commission and President Yanukovych. But in Ukraine, not only President Yanukovych wants to have the DCFTA right now. We welcome very much the decision, the resolution adopted by the Rada after a hearing which happened in the Parliament on 11th of May. That resolution has been adopted by the Rada at a constitutional majority, so it reflects the Parliament as such. And in that resolution, it is clearly stated that key priority for Ukraine is having the DCFTA with the EU, and then, based on this, to cooperate with the customs union, which is led by Russia. So it is clear for everybody right now that DCFTA on one end, customs union with Russia on the other end, are not compatible. Ukraine has to make its choice. And clearly, Ukraine made its choice. Not to go toward the EU and forgetting Russia, just to make a European choice and having a cooperation with the customs union, but not joining the customs union, which is not possible in case Ukraine decides to go and to conclude the DCFTA. So that's where we are, and we consider this as a very, very positive development. So the question is, and asked very, very frequently, what are the positive impacts, positive effects of the DCFTA on Ukraine? Why Ukraine wants to go that way? Mr. Putin said, if Ukraine joins the customs union, it will propose a discount of $8 billion for gas. I don't have an equivalent figure. I don't have. And I used to say that what we propose Ukraine is a difficult agenda of reform through the DCFTA. And I thought twice, even more than twice. And my consequence, my conclusion is, once Ukraine will be tight with the EU through that DCFTA, we will offer Ukraine a path to modernization of its economy. That's the most important benefit. It's not only trade flows. Ukraine will have to open its market to some EU products. The EU will open its market to some Ukrainian products. It will increase trade flows because anytime we conclude an FTA, there is an increase of trade flows both sides. But that's not what is important. What is important is that for many of trade related legislation, competition, public procurement, I don't want to elaborate in detail about this, Ukraine will share the same standards and laws than the EU. And the consequence of this is that Ukraine will enter into a positive circle. If Ukraine share the standards with the EU, if Ukraine open its border with the EU, Ukraine has a chance to import from the EU modern economic governance. If it imports modern economic governance, it will import not only EU goods, it will import EU foreign direct investment. If it imports EU foreign direct investment, it will develop, and these investments will be the best leverage for Ukraine to develop its own economy and to fully benefit from its integration within the EU economy. So that's the stakes of this negotiation, and that's the stake of this DCFTA. By the way, this will happen not over the night, because DCFTA will have transitional period. Ukraine is weaker than the EU. Its economy is weaker than the EU. So we will offer Ukraine transitional period, which could last up to 10 years. So if my agreement enters into force in 2012, the sooner, until 2022, Ukraine will not fully benefit from the DCFTA. So it's a very medium and even long-term prospect we have for this country. But the result is that Ukraine will have a chance to modernize its economy. And I'm going to be frank with you, and I'm going to talk to you as friends, as a friend, and as friends can talk to friends. We are very much worrying to see the way the Ukrainian economy is now functioning. I don't want to enter into the details. Corruption. Be clear. Absence of transparency. Some monopoly, and in particular state-owned monopoly. We don't want this to be on the agenda for Ukraine. That's for you, that's your business. But we consider that this is the main obstacle to your development. So DCFTA will contribute to address these kind of issues and will contribute to provide Ukraine with a model for its future economic development. So as you see, we are very much beyond trade. And last figure, the EU represents the first market for Ukraine together with Russia. Ukraine represents 0.9% of the EU exports. So the EU exporters are not waiting in a starting block to overflow the Ukrainian markets. But the prospects are for Ukraine. Ukraine will benefit from the largest, the richest, and the biggest market in the world, which is the EU market, 500 wealthy inhabitants. So that's the prospect, that's the stakes. Olga, sorry, you just allow me 10 minutes, but when it comes to Ukraine, I'm a bit talkative.
You can,
and
yeah, you cannot,
I think it was useful to clarify and to give you this, I hope, difficult but very positive message.
Thank you. I think I would suggest that Ina would have comments from the parliament view, and then we can move to further questions. Alena, if you don't mind.
Okay. My name is Ina Kirsch. I'm at the policy department of the European Parliament, responsible for Ukraine. And the European Parliament is a bit a different institution than the European Commission is. We see ourselves as representatives of the people, of the common people. At the same time, we see ourselves a bit as a corrective as well to the Commission and looking at it, what they are doing. Till now, the European Commission informed the European Parliament only about the state of play on the association agreement, which is in the competence of the EES and the DCFTA. Till now, it is in the hands of our MEPs who are in charge of foreign affairs. DCFTA belongs not only to foreign affairs, but to international trade. Our members of the so-called Intercommittee are until now not very much aware about Ukraine. Ukraine, in comparison to our other negotiations on free trade zone, does not play such an important role. Ukraine plays for the European Parliament till today an important role as a foreign player, but less as an economic player. There we have to work together, and the members of the Verkhovna Rada, always they are coming, and the members interested in Ukraine business in the European Parliament working on that. And we want to assure that our members dealing with all other affairs, including international trade, including visa issues, will be aware about what is going on in the negotiations and to have a positive approach to it. May me recall the resolution of the European Parliament, which we adopted on the 25th of November in 2010, where we clearly stressed that the European Parliament is in favor of a membership of Ukraine at a certain time in the European Union, but Ukraine has to fulfill before all necessary criteria to this. For the European Parliament, it is of utmost importance that Ukraine follows the pace of democracy, and if this is done, we are sure that the questions which we have open on trade will be solved as well. Nowadays, we get negative signals from Ukraine concerning these democracy questions, and that's why this is of bigger importance to us than the trade-related issues, which should be, from my perspective, personal perspective, even more in the picture of our members, but due to the developments in your countries, this is not. Let me say as well that the European Parliament, as well as the Commission and the Council, very much appreciated the stand of Mr. Yanukovych on the statement of Mr. Medvedev concerning the customs union. We know that it is a very, very difficult situation in which Ukraine appeared. And you can be sure that all European institutions will support Ukraine in their decision taken. Let me remind you, because Philip didn't do this yet, that we agreed as EU to support the implementation of the DCFTA with 320 million euros, and which is, Philip, I think I'm right, with a third of the money needed. And so we think that in the long perspective, Ukraine gets a big profit from the relations to be developed, when it signs, no, when it agrees to the association and agreement, including the DCFTA, by end of the year. But we should make clear that we should not miss the momentum. If we miss the momentum of this year, nobody can predict what happens afterwards. It will be very difficult for Ukraine concerning its international obligations. At the same time, it will be difficult for the EU to develop its relations with Ukraine, but as well with the other Eastern Partnership countries. For us, Ukraine is a test case. We are creating a matrix for the relations with the others. If we got stuck with you, we'll get stuck with Moldova, with Georgia, with Armenia, and with Azerbaijan. We will have no incentive for Belarus to go back to the democratic path and to develop in another way than they are doing now. That's why for the European Parliament, this is of utmost importance. And let me say maybe something what we would like to wish to see in future to be developed better. We are missing a clear and transparent communication coming from Ukraine. We propose to the Verkhovna Rada to cooperate on the development of laws. We propose the experience of our new membership, new members of the European Union. We have many members from Poland who are willing to share their experience by approaching the European Union. You do not make use or sufficient use of this experience yet. Plus, when you do things, it's very often communicated only if it is if there are critical aspects. We want to see as well a positive message coming from Ukraine, and not only including the governmental structures, the majority in the Verkhovna Rada, but we want to see as well a constructive opposition working together on the behalf of Ukraine in view of a European perspective, like this was done recently at the hearing.
Alena, your questions, please.
Thank you. I think you have already answered some of other questions. But still, we have a question. Viktor Shrinchak, please. My name is Viktor Shrinchak. I'm the head of the Oversight Committee of the Institute of World Policy, and using this opportunity still, I would like to put a more political issue than a political question, but not economic question. The question is that does Brussels understand that in Ukraine there are still different groups of influence on the president? And not all these groups are unanimous, and not all think about closing with the EU. I would like to present my own opinion that, for example, it's my conviction that if a working group wouldn't be headed by the first Prime Minister Kluyev, who is interested in making closing ties with the EU, but the head of the Security State Service of Ukraine, Mr. Khodorkovsky, would be head, but we wouldn't be a step closer to these stages at which we are now. My question is, and is a simple thing. Do you understand that many people from the surrounding of the incumbent president fails him to provoke some negative response from the West? To make some negative conclusions by him to undermine finally the signing or conclusion of this agreement? Thank you.
Because Philip is a more neutral person than we are, and we are the more political institution, let me answer one thing. First, we very much appreciate that Mr. Kluyev got involved in the whole thing, because he pushed the process forward in a very positive way. So Mr. Kluyev, beside his personal interests, everybody knows, we know he did a good job on that. Further, it is up to the Ukrainians to decide about their own political structure, and you have elected the Verkhovna Rada, you have chosen a majority, and it is up to the Ukrainians to decide on their own whom they want to have. First. Second, we have got positive signals from from the president, as well as the prime minister concerning the European ambitions. So for us, those are the major signals. Internal difficulties inside the government of Ukraine, that is a business of Ukraine. We judge on the outcome of the negotiations and not on your internal processes. Therefore, you have your own, and that's why I spoke about the constructive opposition, to make clear what the differences could be. And we are very much in favor of this of the progress which was made till now. That this economical structures in Ukraine will change by reforming the country, that is obvious. And we will see what the next elections will bring. But you moved already quite a way forward since your independence, and we hope this will progress.
Just one word to say that I fully agree with what Ina said. I'm very surprised by the fact that until last October, during 3 years, we had the impression that in Ukraine nobody was in the driving seat for the negotiation. And since October, we saw first Mr. Azarov taking the lead, and quickly after we saw Mr. Kluyev taking the lead. And for us, we have just a single interlocutor. So as Ina said, the domestic debate, I shouldn't say that we don't care, it's not our business, but clearly we have somebody in the driving seat, and that, by the way, corresponds to a phase where the negotiation started to move forward clearly over the last 6 months. So for us, very positive.
If I may add a few words from member states' perspective, because we don't have any representatives of the member states here, I don't think they really understand what's happening in Ukraine, especially the fight around the president and different competing interests that would drag him more towards Russia or the European Union. But definitely there is a big concern for some member states who want to see Ukraine closer when they hear talks about the customs union. And I don't think that they heard clearly from Kiev, despite the fact that Mr. Yanukovych was saying that we are going to conclude negotiations with the EU this year. They didn't hear a clear and coherent message that would support that. So I guess that the next round of negotiations on DCFTA and issues that Ukrainians have to discuss with the European Commission will show how serious is Yanukovych. Another issue that member states also see coming from Ukraine and that concerns them, what can have an impact on DCFTA, even if member states are not really saying much on the process of negotiations now, is the political situation and the selective justice. And that's something that started being raised in Brussels and some capitals for a few months already. And some member states are saying that maybe we should consider, not putting hold, but making it very clear to the Ukrainian side that negotiations may be harmed if the selective justice, for instance, continues. So I don't think that it's possible to understand the Ukrainian situation and the competing powers around the president if you are not in Kiev, but definitely what comes out of that really affects the way member states see the situation in Ukraine and the impact for negotiations.
Ola, even if you're in Kyiv, it's not always clear what is happening here. Don't worry, we're almost in the same situation, the same shoes with you. Good afternoon, dear colleagues. Igor Zhdanov, president of the Analytical Center Open Politics. It's a pleasant thing that we speak in our Brussels colleagues in the same language and understand the same. For Ukraine, an issue of concluding an agreement on free trade zone, it's not an issue of the economy and the access to the market, which accounts 500 million citizens. And it has about 15 trillions of the GDP. This issue of geopolitical strategic choice to be made by Ukraine. I would like to argue my colleague, Mr. Viktor Slanchuk, that indeed it's not possible that it is the case that there are different groups that influence the president, but the public policy of the president that the agreement on free trade zone should be concluded with the EU this year. I was pleasantly surprised, and it was not always the case when both the opposition and the government most of the society was unanimous in the opinion on choosing the European way of Ukraine and a very cautious attitude to the customs union. In that regard, I have a question. Two big questions. First question, what are now problematic issues in talks on conclusion this? Well, so the first issue was the geographic names, and what is the compromise achieved, and to what extent is the parties are ready to this how it is related to the agreement on association, why it is postponed till the year 2012-2013?
Okay. So thank you for the question. First of all, geographical indication. Champagne. That's Champagne-Skoye. I don't know if my pronunciation is correct in Ukrainian.
Champagne-Skoye.
So that's a big issue with Ukraine. And that's not the first time the EU is facing this problem. We had this problem in the past with some countries, in particular with some EU countries, new member states. We asked these countries to get rid of conflicting names because it's part of the intellectual property rights. That's the way we consider this. By the way, this is something which is built from WTO provision, so that's not only an EU mantra. So the compromise for this is we understand very well that it could be painful at short term for Ukraine, even if we consider that at medium long term Ukraine will benefit from this. And I will give you an example of that. It could be painful at short term because Ukraine will have to rebrand its traditional products, some of its traditional products. To rebrand means cost. So the EU is ready to address this cost. And the EU is ready to help Ukraine not only through money, but also through technical assistance and through assistance at large. I'm going to give you examples. Rebranding meaning that Ukraine will have to create new marks. We are ready to finance, even with business, to finance participation of Ukrainian companies into wine fairs in Western Europe. We will do things like this. We are negotiating with the Ukrainian side right now an action plan. We try to establish an action plan of what Ukraine has to do and which way the EU can help to do this. But on substance, what we propose Ukraine is to get rid of this name because they are protected. But in exchange, Ukraine will shift from second class to first class category. And we had in the past the same problem in Champagne with Spain. Spain had to get rid of Champagne and created Cava. So Spain was second class for Champagne. And Spain discovered over the years that shifting to the first class with its own Cava It increased very much its exports and its production of cava because Spain had access to the EU market. So a name like Roquefort, which is cheese, once Ukraine would change its name in, I don't know, Blue Crimea, something like this, I don't know. Plus branding, plus marketing in Berlin, in London, in Paris, all the consumers are very eager to find new products, fancy products from Ukraine. Ukraine will benefit from very big commercial prospects. So don't look at it as a threat. We understand there is a short-term cost. We are ready to address this, but consider the prospect which we'll give you. Second question concerning why 2012 or 2013, it's largely because of question of process. If, not if, but when, because I'm optimistic, we will conclude with Ukraine the deal, say, this year, we will need to translate an agreement in 23, 24, maybe 25 languages. 23 EU languages plus Ukrainian and the Russian, maybe. No, Ukrainian only. So, 24 languages. So, only this, 100 and 100 pages to be translated. Then, adoption process. As negotiator, I have to go to the member states to tell the member states, okay, can you verify the if I'm in line with what you asked me to do, which is to negotiate an FTA with Ukraine. So, the member state will have to take a stance on this. Then, the parliament. And the parliament will take a close eye on this agreement on a political point of view, because you all understood that this agreement is first and foremost a political agreement. So it concerns political issues, and I should even say historical issues beyond the trade. So that's why, in the best case scenario, we cannot have this agreement in force before, within minimum 1 year, 1 year and a half after the conclusion, after having reached the deal, to have this agreement in force and operational for economic operators like Anna doing business with DTEC.
Maybe add our procedural things. Philip is right. That's why I spoke about the momentum as well, not to be to miss. You should bear in mind that Ukraine has to translate it, and I'm sure, knowing your country a bit, this can be very fast in Ukraine. Even you need the lawyer linguists to check on these things. We know Ukraine, if it wants, it can do things. But Europe is big, and it takes sometimes quite a lot of time to do things here. We are very bureaucratic and very many things. So it will be, in any case, the European Parliament, once the Commission and comes to the Parliament, to calling for doing it as quick as possible. We have seen with Korea that it can be quick, but it depends as well on your partner. If Ukraine starts to do its business as quick as possible, and you can already today start with certain things, then this can happen as well on our side quicker, and you can be sure that the European Parliament will support this. It depends on the way how the Commission will come to the Parliament. But we expect the Commission to introduce the interim agreement for the trade-related aspects of the association agreement nevertheless, it's a deeper and comprehensive part, so we expect our Foreign Affairs Committee to deal with it. I can assure you that beside the worries we have concerning the democratic development in Ukraine, you have a lot of friends inside the Foreign Affairs Committee of the Parliament, and the European Parliament will do its utmost possible to adopt it as quick as possible. But we can only do it once this agreement is signed. So we will include. We will as well ask for the opinion of the MEPs coming from the international trade. But normally it will be the foreign affairs. But I have to tell you two things as well. The first is we have in 2013 European elections. European elections means that from March 2013 on, everything what is not done is very unlikely to be done. And if you know the European institutions a bit, then you know that until July 2013, there won't be any European Parliament, and it will take some months until we have a new European Commission. So if we do not get this momentum, we will be, have a huge delay. Second point which worries us much more at the moment is the association agreement in general. What Olga already said is that the member states have fears concerning Ukraine. And those are not in first place related to economy. That is an issue, but it is a minor issue. The major issue is you have to do your own homework on certain things concerning home and justice, concerning democracy. And our member states think that Ukraine, and maybe because of the negative messages we are always getting from inside Ukraine, that it is a mess in Ukraine and you cannot trust this country. And there is will be a huge work to do to convince the parliaments of the national member states to agree to this association agreement. You can be sure that the European Parliament will be in favor. But what is the stand of the Parliament of France, of Holland, which are always very critical concerning democratic developments in certain countries, will be the stand. And there you will have to progress before you'll get the agreement of those parliaments. So if Philip says it will take two, three years, then I say 2 years, that is optimistic, because there is quite a lot of work to do. So okay for the interim agreement, but you can be very optimistic on the association agreement with saying 3 years, but I'm not sure we will match this.
Thank you, Philip, for the nice comments in my address. I would like to present slightly different prospect with by the eyes of the industry. I had an experience exactly in this sector. You asked about wine sector and GIs, which is sensitive for them. And another way to address it, it's to go to talk between industries at the industrial level. And this is actually what has been done. Last week, Ukrainian representatives of the industry were for this purpose in Champagne to discuss with industry counterparts there and to discuss the situation, what concessions can be made and at the industrial level, and also what kind of support can be provided to Ukrainian industry to make this transition. So the point is, when there is a willingness from the industry side, there also can be progress, and that not only authorities should be involved and discuss between themselves, but also very important for the industries to come together already now before the negotiations are completed, because what Philip and Ina are talking about, these 2-3 more years until everything will be adopted, and then also 10 years for the transitional period for the business who should do all this actually and make it in practice, we should start already now. Thank you.
Well, I would like to clarify one thing, as we have many questions to combine several questions together and for you to answer them. You said a lot, and so to say, made hints. Then the parliaments would consider political issues that the European Parliament will be in favor for this agreement to be ratified, but it is known how the governments will. It is a hint that there are some countries in the EU that, as of today, think whether they would be ready to ratify this agreement, including France and Holland that were mentioned. Do you confirm this information in view of the political situation in Ukraine? And two more questions. And then please, after that, you please answer. Thank you. Let me say, Yanko, Center of International and Comparative Studies. First, I would like to thank Alona for unexpected thing, because I think that's only with Mr. Cuisson, but I see so many positive persons in Kirsch, Olga. It's a good thing to hear. But I would like to propose the following topic for discussion, to look a bit further beyond the borders of Ukraine, to what influence this agreement might have if it is timely concluded and ratified with any obstacles, to that space in that region where Ukraine is situated. Inna Kirshen mentioned Moldova, Caucasus countries. How will we influence these countries? And the key issue for Ukraine, is it realistic to disseminate the experience of concluding such an agreement on the concluded agreement with the Russian Federation? There are two interpretations of the Russians' conduct. First, that Russia wants to make Ukraine far distant from the EU. But Russia, not less than Ukraine, is also interested in economic closing with the EU, but simply selects another way, not direct talks, but to create first the customs union and then to conduct talks on a more powerful platform. Do you think it's realistic to disseminate this experience towards Russia? From the Ukrainian Institute of Public Politics. I would like to thank also on my side to Alona and to the Institute of World Politics to participating to communicate with representatives from the European Union. And a small comment and a brief question. Indeed, you all underlined, and you are right, that we have now an interesting and unique situation. Ukraine's consensus to one of the most important foreign issues. That's the consensus in the society.
I'm sorry, we don't hear the translation.
Sorry.
We don't hear the translation. Can you speak up, please? Can you please speak up, because we don't hear the translation.
Голосніше говорити треба. So, будь ласка. Do you hear now me?
Yes, much better.
Do you hear? So I'll repeat once more. The question has been that, indeed, we have a good situation to conclude an agreement on free trade zone and association, because it's for the first time probably that a notable consensus has been accumulated in the government, in the opposition, and in the society, when the society and the government and opposition speak in the same foreign policy language with respect to European integration. It's desirable for this possibility not to be lost, and from the EU side to be understanding that the EU should use this favorable situation to its advantage. And so another comment, as we speak on positive aspects for Ukraine, Mr. Philip indeed stressed such key issues as widening of the market for Ukraine, an opportunity for importing of the economic management solutions, new technologies in different areas. But from Ukraine, one can see also negative aspects because of the low-level competitiveness of the Ukrainian economy, in particular newly emerged companies and the agriculture, which in the EU gets quite considerable support, and through the increasing the competitive pressure, the domestic agricultural produce will face a problem in the area of competitiveness. In your opinion, from the Europe's perspective, what What will the negative does on you about Ukraine's accession to the EU, or everything is cloudless and nice?
Maybe I start with the correcting once more the parliament thing you asked about. It's the national parliaments have to ratify the association agreement. And I gave you only two examples of countries, but we have many more who you know from the public statements of their governments and their parliament and their members of parliament have a quite critical stand towards what's going on concerning democracy in Ukraine. So I mentioned only two countries, but I can mention even my own country, Germany, which is very critical to the recent developments in concerning the democratic path of Ukraine. And you need to convince the parliaments of all member states that they want to have this association agreement with Ukraine, that it is they conclude the most far-going agreement ever concluded between the European Union and another partner, which opens the path to enlargement with Ukraine. And Ukraine nowadays does not fulfill the Copenhagen criteria which would allow Ukraine to become member. So there you have to do some work. And let me say something. When we look at the achievements of Ukraine, we say, yes, you have some laws nowadays already voted in the Verkhovna Rada. But if we look at the implementation of these laws, there is a lot which has to be done. And if we speak about expectations we had, and we look at the perception of the business nowadays and the investment climate, which Philip spoke about, we have much more expectations. If we look at the question how you go on with the taxes, if we go look into customs regimes, if we look in such specific cases, there's a lot what has to be done. And you have to do your work, your homework, but not only do it, but talk as well about it and have and show that the whole Ukraine is standing behind it and do not concentrate on fighting, because the only thing we get as message is always a very bad news. And we, working with you, know there are as well some success stories to be told. But please make this clear to us. Concerning Russia, we are expecting the upcoming summit, to take some decisions. And Russia had made this proposal of in a long-run perspective to conclude an freight trade agreement with the European Union. And the European Union has said it will look into this question and it will be for sure discussed at the summit, and at the upcoming summit, as well as the visa issues. But there we cannot say now, before it passed, what will happen. We know that Russia is a very important partner of the European Union. It is, and it was. So, and we expect to develop this relations, but Ukraine is a different partner for us. We know that Ukraine will maybe become, at a certain day, member of the European Union. We know that Russia won't. So there is a big difference. Concerning Moldova, when you put the question so clear, and concerning Georgia, and I do not want to reach out now to Armenia and Azerbaijan, which is a bit of a different case, I have to say, if we look at the willingness of the Moldovan government to adapt to the acquis communautaire, and we see how the willingness to include this into the association agreement and to work on this, really to work on it, then we see a lot of progress. If we look at Georgia and the fight against corruption, which is a crucial element of our relations, then we see more progress than Ukraine. Ukraine made progress, but not as far as we wanted. So that's why there is more in it, and it will be up to Ukraine to decide how far and how fast things will develop.
I would like to emphasize what Ina said concerning the ratification process and what is going to happen. I'm going to be very sad and very disappointed when it will come to ratification of the FTA with Ukraine. Why? We just ratified recently an FTA with South Korea. When it came to the European Parliament and to the member state, what was discussed was only and purely trade stakes. Only purely trade stakes. When it will come to the discussion with Ukraine, it will be only about political issues. Nobody cares about Ukraine because it's not a secret. Ukraine is not as aggressive as South Korea is vis-à-vis the EU markets. So the EU markets, the EU industry, even the EU agriculture is not afraid by the competition from Ukraine as it was from South Korea. So they will focus, the member states will focus on political issues. They will focus on judiciary. They will focus on things like this. So I will be disappointed. Nobody will speak about trade, even to this, to ratify the DCFTA part of the agreement. Customs union, you refer to the customs union. I would like to recall the position which was taken by the Ukraine government, which is fair for us. If Ukraine has an FTA with the EU, Ukraine can have an FTA with Russia or with the customs union. But if Ukraine goes to the customs union with Russia, which is, by the way, Russia, Belarus, Kazakhstan, which are not even WTO members. If Ukraine was to go there, Ukraine is part of a bloc which is closed. Because a customs union is what? It is just an FTA plus common external trade policy. So the members are not longer mastering their trade policy. So Ukraine would not master any longer its trade policy, which de facto will be decided in Moscow. Maybe it's good for Ukraine, but it's for Ukraine to decide. So this is why the FTA with the EU is not exclusive. Ukraine can have FTA with Turkey, with Russia, with any country it wants. But the customs union is exclusive. So that's the only message we wanted to pass, and apparently we were successful in passing that message.
I would like to pick up on two issues. To make a relation between them. One about the competitiveness, you said, the low competitiveness of Ukrainian products. We should answer the question, what should we do to increase the competitiveness? And we are not competitive towards whom? So now we are quite competitive with our neighbors, like Russia, for example. But Russia, which their representative just last year in Brussels at the European Business Summit confirmed, is going very much to implement the same standards for their products as are in the European Union, to approximate to the acquis. This is not just the words. They were ahead in Ukraine when REACH was concerned, the legislation for chemical substances, for example. They are much ahead in Ukraine on research and development cooperation with the European Union. And this is also the question where business should look. So then the reforms are needed, and then the DCFTA is a tool also to push and to facilitate reforms in Ukraine. When you are talking about the agriculture, I suppose you talk mostly about grains and cereals production, probably, and also meat and other products. But then we have not only quotas, what was highly discussed until recently. We have also the standards, sanitary and phytosanitary standards, which we should implement in our country. And unfortunately, if we take milk, for example, for the last 3 years, the European Commission sent 3 times already the mission to verify the situation with the milk sector. And not always was because of the companies were so bad, but also because of the infrastructure that veterinary sanitary authorities didn't correspond to the criteria. And it's only the first step to open the market and then to do a lot in the European market already quite intensified with these products. But it's still possible to reach it. So for business, it's really the question of looking ahead and also doing being ready for the reforms. Thank you.
The next. Irina Solonenko, International Renaissance Foundation. I have two questions. The first question is the following. We've been talking today about long-term advantages upon conclusion of a free trade zone agreement and costs, short-term costs. Can we speak about some advantages in middle-term and short-term perspective? Because in Ukraine, the society and classes think in short-term terms, and then I present that civic society which tries to convince the entire society that we, that our European integration is of advantage to us, and we lack this knowledge. What would be short-term? I think that there is a need for some just additional research. Probably you have. And a second question: what will be the mechanism for enforcement of the agreement? I can imagine that after conclusion of the agreement, there will be some opposition from major vendors, major producers, and when the parliament will pass the law, well, they will ratify, and we probably it maybe will be lessened. Just what will be the proposals then in this regard? Good afternoon. May I put a question in the Russian? I think you read the chat. I represent the Information Union Agency, news agency. A lot have been talking about a political component. I would like to recall that the question is about the free trade zone, and the trade is a key word here. So far, a major discussion has been about the terms of this trade. The main questions on Ukraine were named problematic issues, the issue of quotas for agriculture produce and the services, transport services. Considering that recently an intermediate round of talks took place, and as far as there is some news was disseminated, that a good result was achieved there. Can you specify that the trade is trade, and one should know on what terms the trade will run? Can you refer to some indicators in about quotas, and what about transport services? Would Ukraine be allowed to enter into the transport services market in Europe? Good afternoon, Zhovny Renkinka Pavlov, Center of Strategic Studies. Today we didn't say a word about corruption. But when we speak about the free trade zone, where that it seems to me there is a back schlagbaum, there is a back stopping post in Ukraine's aspiration to join to the EU, because to conduct business with Russia is quite simpler. It's quite simpler to implement corruption schemes than it is done, might be done with the EU. Mr. Cuisson said that the free trade provides for the creation of the integration of Ukraine into the economy of the US. As far as I understand, the free trade zone should be a zone of trade free from corruption, including from Ukraine. Since it is a systemic phenomenon, to become 1 year is not possible. It seems to me that there is such a recommendation on my part to make a cooperation with Ukraine, with those companies, with those businesses, with those territories, which are already free from corruption and gradually to extend this territory. As for the mechanisms and other advice, there should be an oversight, a commissioner that would stay here to exercise control over this issue. Brussels, you're welcome to answer these questions.
Me? Again, I start on the first. The question about the costs and about the short-term perspectives. I would put the question a bit different. What is the choice Ukraine has? Ukraine made the choice to modernize and to reform. You cannot go on as you do today, and you made the decision to go the European path. And that is, from my point of view, at least, and of those who are sitting here, a very good choice. Because it gives you a perspective. But it will depend on Ukraine, how much it will profit from it and how long it will take. I give you an example. Once you'll have signed the association agreement, you will be able to count on financial support for Ukraine. We know, for example, when signing the procurement law, it will not be easy for Ukraine to get on with the economic structure it has today. To get, for example, all the people who are working in constructing streets to do the work. And we know if you go to procurement, it's as well Polish companies who could come and build streets in Ukraine. And they have modernized. It will be a very difficult thing to do, that we know. But you will be able first to get support from our side to build those streets, to be connected to the 10th of Europe, to get other things to be developed. That is something, but it depends on you. And as you all of you will already know, we have just, Commissioner Füle just yesterday introduced the ENP reform East. And there it is clearly said, those who will deliver will get more support. So it is up to Ukraine to see how far it will progress in its reform. And as more it progresses, as more support it will get, first thing. Second, if you pass your work on visa liberalization, everything what is necessary, vote the necessary laws, vote, implement them, and vote them together between majority and opposition. Get them to pass. Then you can profit as quick as possible from the visa liberalization and the reforms which are linked to it. If you will delay yourself this process, then it will take much longer. So again, the question of time is related to the work Ukraine does itself. Transport is Philip. Corruption, I mentioned it. For us, the fight against corruption is a major issue, and it belongs to those criteria which count for the new policy, more for more, less for less. So, once more, implement your laws. Get the laws done. Get the structures to work. Then you will yourself succeed by modernizing your country and you will profit from it. This signing the association agreement with the trade part of it, it is in the interest of Ukraine as a modernizing country. If you decide not to go for modernization, it is your choice, but then you won't profit from it.
I just would like to focus on two or three issues. First of all, the benefit of the DCFTA will be concrete with one example, which is relating to the question which was raised about civil society. When we take a decision into the EU, we have to consult by law first the business and civil society. And we have to even go further, we have to justify that the measures we're going to adopt are going to be adopted after having thoroughly consulted through sustainability assessment, civil society and business. So this element will be part of the DCFTA and association agreement. So Ukraine will be forced, will be urged to adopt this way to behave. I think it's a progress for the Ukrainian society. Another example, public procurement. We want that call for tenders are rewarded on a transparent way, not by governments, not by authorities, but by independent bodies. That's the way it works into the EU. So I can tell you, we urge Ukraine to do this. When European companies will apply for a call for tender in Ukraine, they will voice concern in case it doesn't work. But the Ukrainian company would be allowed to apply for call for tenders in Poland. If Poland is about to build a new airport in Warsaw, the Ukrainian company will be allowed to compete for this with their own advantages, in particular excellent technical skills and low cost. So it will work both sides, and it will create advantage for both parties. Monitoring. We're going to have into this agreement a dispute settlement, which is based on assessment by independent body in case the parties have a row. And the dispute settlement will take a stance and will say, okay, Ukraine is in breach or the EU is in breach, and the other party will be allowed to take retaliation within the scope of the DCFTA. So that's also something which is very concrete and which will be very effective. Transport services and road transport, the question which was raised. I'm going to be very blunt with this. The EU is not offering this to Ukraine right now. That not only because we are naughty with Ukraine. The average salary of a truck driver into the EU is 1,000 euro a month, 10,000 hryvnias. We don't want to be forced that our drivers are obliged to cut their salaries by a competition from a country, Ukraine, in which the drivers are less paid. Our objective is that one day, okay, not tomorrow, but one day, that the Ukraine drivers are paid such an amount. At that very moment, they will be allowed to enter into the EU with the trucks. So, social aspect is important. Technical aspect, the trucks into the EU, they are very safe trucks. Of course, it's very demanding, very costly. We know that Ukraine cannot offer this right now, but we want to urge to bring Ukraine to the high standards and not to be obliged that we are obliged to go to downgrade our standards. That's the true reason. This is why we don't offer this to Ukraine right now, as we don't offer it to any other country except candidate countries. For reasons which doesn't belong to me, Ukraine is not a candidate country. But we urge Ukraine to reach these standards. And once Ukraine will reach these standards, I can tell you that Ukraine will be allowed to benefit from such a clause, because this negotiation is not a negotiation for once and for all. It will allow in the future, in over the years, to be improved, to be reopened, to be discussed once again. And by the way, should be clear that if an Ukrainian company wants to respect these EU standards and wants to settle, to establish into Poland, for example, it is allowed to do so from the beginning of the entry into force of the DCFTA. So don't forget this aspect of the thing. Of course, respecting these standards is the best for social and environmental aspects. So we have very demanding, very high standards. We agree with this. Once Ukraine will join these standards, which will be long and painful, okay, fair enough with this, you will be allowed to benefit. But we don't want to have this, what is objectively, which should be an unfair competition, which would ruin what we have built over the past decade, which means high social and environmental standards. That's the true reason of this decision not to grant road transport right now to Ukraine in this negotiation.
If I can just add to develop on this civil society factor, or sustainability chapter in the DCFTA, part of the agreement, it is really something which can influence internal civil society, including the industrial sector organizations and social partners, and where there is already huge support from counterparts, namely European Economic Social Committee, from this side. And as we discussed in the frames of the just to see the how other countries see this on the Eastern Partnership Civil Society Forum, colleagues from NGOs in Moldova and Georgia and other countries, who also would like to, the countries would like to have the same type of agreement with the EU. First of all, for them, the first advantage was consumer protection and higher environmental standards. So this is something which rings a bell of simple people and the population, because then the companies will be forced to implement higher standards, and the same, there are a list of the directives on the environmental protection, for example, in the association agreement, which companies have to respect. So in the end, we'll have to have clear water, clear air, and better condition for living.
More questions from Kiev, please.
We are approaching already the end of our bridge. We have yet one more question. Kirill Popov, political commentator of the newspaper Vecherny Vesti. Just recently, the European has lost the position of the director in the oversight board in the European Bank for Construction Development. But it is because of the Romanian standpoint. Another question. Is it not a concern to Brussels, a conflict between Romania and Ukraine? As it doesn't turn out that this relationship between Romania and Ukraine might constitute a serious barrier towards our European accession. Shifted accent in our. But if you want to comment on this issue, you're welcome.
I think we would go for the next question because none of us is in a position to comment on this issue.
There is a brief question. Good afternoon, Sergei Zhuk, Center of Globalistica and Strategy 2012. One of the problematic issues in talks between the EU and Ukraine has been to create a compensation foundation to compensate losses because of the energy crisis. Is this question resolved? Because in view of the current situation in Ukraine, it's not possible to help. To clearly state who is the guilty party in such gas wars, gas crisis, shift the burden on the shoulders of Ukraine as a guilty party in some energy crisis if they emerge in Europe. Indeed, this question is interesting question. This issue has been discussed a lot among would Naftogaz, that's oil and gas supplying company, would be obliged to pay for losses in case there are some interruption of gas supplies to Europe from Russia?
I'm going to tell you a secret. Next Tuesday, Mr. Kluyev will discuss with my boss, Trade Commissioner Mr. de Gucht, here in Brussels. Like a secret is, this issue will represent probably the most important part of the discussion, because clearly this issue is not solved. The EU considers that the trade flow, the transit of energy should be safe and secured. We put the blame on nobody, that's not the question, but we just want to be sure that the gas transiting through Ukraine has a free flow without any difficulty. So that's an issue which has to be discussed. And to tell you frankly, that's one of the most difficult part of our negotiation right now. But I'm still expecting that
our masters will find an agreement on this issue. Maybe not next Tuesday, but clearly it's a very high on the agenda, the highest item on the CFTA agenda right now.
Then you tell me what is left else for the other and unresolved issues to be discussed during the next meeting.
Well, it's clear that Ukraine, for example, wants the EU to open more broadly the gates for its own agricultural exports. So that's an issue to be addressed, and also that issue will be discussed. And, you know, a compromise is if EU offers this and Ukraine asks for this, we have to do both sides part of the way. So the EU will do its duty. The EU will do its duty in that regard. The road transport is an issue for Ukraine. It's painful. And right now, we are not allowed as negotiator to tell Ukraine we're going to grant you this. But as I told you, we have to pave the way for the future, and we will see what will happen from the discussion. Energy is clearly a problem. So it's clearly an issue which is, as I said, the highest on the agenda. We also have the question of the export restriction, which are introduced by Ukraine, in particular on some sectors like grain export, wheat, cereals, export restriction at large, export quotas or export duties. It's clear that we want Ukraine to get rid of these. On the other way around, Ukraine asks the EU to get rid of its export subsidies on agriculture products. We are ready to address this issue also, under condition. If Ukraine is eager to accept to have reciprocal offers on agriculture products, we already said that we are ready to consider this request from Ukraine, which is fair. So that's the elements which are going to be under discussion. And the geographical indications, I spoke about it. It's an issue which is also addressed. I'm pretty confident that we're going to find a solution for this. By the way, I will take an example for you, and that will be my last word. I like very much in Krashatik Avenue, Budabar. You know Budabar? If you go in that Budabar, fancy bar, if you want to get a fancy drink, you ask for French champagne. Okay? But there is a Budabar in Paris, in Champs-Élysées, the same. If you want to ask for a fancy drink, you can ask for French champagne. You never ask for Ukrainian champagne, but you can ask also, very fancy, the Spanish cava. And I hope that one day, in Budabar in Paris, we will be allowed to drink excellent Ukrainian champagne.
Okay. Quite optimistic note for the completion, but in view of many problematic issues you cited, I wonder from where you take so much optimism, or you know something that we are not aware of, and we would like to know what is the ground of this flexibility. In any case, just we would be finishing it. If you want to say some final remarks, you're welcome. On my side, I would like to say indeed that our today's discussion, I don't know, I was infused by it to some extent, because doesn't coincide with what we see here now in Ukraine, how it goes on, this process about, particularly in view of political events. And at the same time, indeed, I want it to be in going on that way, as you said, but not as it is happening always during the football matches between Ukraine and Italy, when Ukraine creates a lot of chances to make goal, but always it's the Italy, United team that takes the goal, but in the orders, in this case, Russia will win. It's the floor to you. On my side, I would thank the Kyiv studio, and I would thank you and the U.S. Embassy to Ukraine for this nice connection, and to Carnegie Center, and personally to Olga and Ina for the for the technical support and organizational efforts on part of Brussels?
I think that we have a feeling that we do have to conclude on a more positive note. And as my colleague said, that a lot will depend on what Ukraine has to do, both during negotiations but also after. I think that what we have to understand is that Brussels itself is not really one animal or one person or one institution. There are a lot of interests within Brussels, both from member states, from the European Commission, from the European Parliament, and we also have to take that into account when we look at the European side and how easy it is to make different decisions and concessions. And I think that if my colleagues want to have some final remarks,
just say maybe one thing. Yourself have to be optimistic. If you do not believe in what you are doing and what you want to achieve, if you do not trust the politicians you elected, you appointed, then there is nothing good. We trust them. We believe they will make the better out of Ukraine. They are working for the future of Ukraine, and that's why we are working with them. So maybe you should start looking as well optimistic to it, and then we both will at the end achieve a result. And I'm still sure we will be there in December to conclude the negotiations with a positive signature.
I also would like to say that the CFTA actually it is about the economic integration. What everybody talks and what is important for business. And this economic integration has already started, and we have already legal basis for this for energy sphere. As a member, as Ukraine is a full member of the energy community, that's already a first big step ahead, which we had made, and which I, as representative of my company and this part of the industry, can say that we supported energy community and we support the CFTA, and we see really that this is the way to push necessary reforms. Thank you.
Thank you, Kiev, for many questions, especially difficult questions to Philippe and Ina and Anna, and I think that we will continue this practice of exchanging views, and we hope to hear more of Kiev opinions at a later stage of how Kiev sees negotiations completing and the impact for Ukraine.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
The best to you. Good luck in your work and what relates to establishing better cooperation with Ukraine. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Can you explore how to control the microphone?
My conclusion is having been